Thanks for listening to the History Buff podcast with your resident history buff and Berlin tour guide, Arty. If you're enjoying the podcast and would like to see more History Buff content, then please do give us a follow on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for your support. Welcome back to Ukraine's Story, a History Buff series in which we chart Ukraine's national story, from the medieval Kievan Rus right up to independence and the current Russo-Ukrainian War. Last time, we talked about the Euromaidan protests and the Revolution of Dignity. This event marked a pivotal moment in modern Ukraine's journey toward European integration. After the Euromaidan protests in 2014, Russia violated Ukraine's territorial integrity by annexing Crimea and instigating an armed rebellion in the east, marking the beginning of the Russo-Ukrainian War, initially confined to the eastern regions. In this final episode of the Ukraine Story series, we will delve into the war's escalation that remains vivid in our memories, Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which began on the 24th of February 2022. Before February 2022, despite the difficult situation in the east, Ukraine had tried to maintain a semblance of normal life. President Petro Poroshenko, elected in 2014, took steps to draw Ukraine closer to Europe, introducing a visa-free regime with Schengen countries in 2017. Poroshenko also implemented measures and reforms aimed at stabilizing and improving Ukraine's economic and social situation. An innovative approach included the introduction of electronic declarations for public officials to combat corruption, although corruption still persisted. The social and economic situation became increasingly tense, with the national currency, the hryvnia, losing value against the US dollar and rising prices for utilities and food. These negative trends were attributed to Russia's military aggression against Ukraine, creating challenges for the nation's daily survival. The Ukrainian people grew weary of lies, corruption, social inequality, and the protracted situation in Donbass that showed no prospects for resolution. On the eve of the 2019 presidential election in Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, a comedian and actor from the popular program Kvartal 95, entered the Ukrainian political scene. Zelensky's immense popularity helped him secure a record 73% of the vote. His election program promised improvements in Ukraine's political and economic situation, efforts for EU accession, and, crucially, an end to hostilities in the east. Many experts compared Zelensky to Ronald Reagan and predicted his success. Despite Zelensky's early efforts to implement reforms and fight corruption, challenges arose due to his lack of political experience and disagreements within the Verkhovna Rada. The pro-Russian opposition Platform for Life party, led by Viktor Medvedchuk, who is associated with Vladimir Putin, often obstructed legislative progress. After the full-scale invasion, members of the opposition Platform for Life party fled to Russia, and Medvedchuk was arrested. Zelensky's active diplomatic efforts improved Ukraine's relations with Europe and America, and he actively called for international cooperation. However, in addressing Russian aggression, Zelensky opted for negotiation tactics, seeking a peaceful resolution. Russian President Vladimir Putin, however, displayed an unwillingness to let Ukraine go and showed no interest in open diplomatic contact. All of Putin's actions were perceived as stalling for time, with the belief that eventually the world would tire of supporting Ukraine, making it easier for Russia to capture it. Political contradictions among MPs, corruption, and slow improvement of the social and economic situation persisted in Ukraine until that fateful day, the 24th of February 2022. The situation around Ukraine was growing tense, with Vladimir Putin refusing diplomatic contact and accusing Ukraine of Minsk agreement violations, which he himself openly flouted. To exert political and psychological pressure, the Russian army conducted joint military exercises with the Belarusian army, exploiting Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's de facto dependence on Russia. American and British intelligence warned of Russian troop buildups near the Ukrainian border, signaling preparations for an invasion, though many in Ukraine were initially skeptical. Poland established a refugee reception centre on its border in anticipation of potential migration waves. On the 24th of February 2022, at 4:50 a.m., Putin's pre-recorded speech aired on Russian television, officially recognizing the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republic as parts of the Russian Federation. Most significantly, he announced the commencement of a special military operation, or SVO. The SVO aimed to protect the Russian-speaking population, demilitarize the Ukrainian army, and eliminate what Putin referred to as the, quote, Nazi elite. And all individuals labeled as fascists, bandits, and Nazis that were terrorizing Ukraine. This is despite the fact that Zelensky himself is Jewish. Simultaneously, around 3 and 4 a.m., Russian aviation initiated missile strikes on major military facilities and airports in Ukraine, while Russian columns advanced from Crimea, Donbass, and Belarus. Ukrainian President Zelensky, in a morning address on the 24th of February, urged unity, resilience, and resistance against the aggressor, demonstrating personal resolve by rejecting political asylum and expressing his intention to stay in Ukraine and announcing the severing of all diplomatic ties with Russia. The Ukrainian army, considered cohesive and effective, received support and weapons from international partners, enabling them to withstand and launch counterattacks against the invaders. These are a list of some of the most important events and hostilities so far in the war. The Russian army attacked from multiple directions, capturing parts of several Ukrainian regions in the first months, prompting Ukrainian guerrilla tactics that inflicted significant losses and forced Russian retreat. By April 1st to the 2nd, the entire Kyiv region was liberated, followed by Zhytomyr, Chernihiv, and Sumy regions a week later. On April the 13th, Ukrainian forces fired Neptune missiles at the Russian missile cruiser Moskva, leading to its sinking. The defense of Azovstal, a metallurgical plant in Mariupol, showcased Ukrainian resilience, lasting a month before evacuation orders to save lives were issued on the 16th to the 17th of May. On the 23rd of June, the European Council granted Ukraine candidate status for EU membership. On the 27th of June, Russia defaulted for the first time since 1918 due to sanctions. By the 22nd of July, an agreement on the safe export of grain through the Black Sea was signed by Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN, leading to a Russian violation of the non-aggression agreement with an attack on the Black Sea port city of Odessa. On the 28th to the 29th of July, Russian troops blew up a prison colony in Olenivka, Donetsk region. Explosions rocked military facilities in Crimea in August 2022. On the 7th of September, Ukrainian forces conducted a rapid operation in Kherson, liberating much of the region. On the 21st of September, Putin announced partial mobilization in Russia, a week after announcing the annexation of seized territories. On October the 8th, an explosion damaged the Kerch Bridge. In mid-October, Bakhmut became the focal point of fighting in eastern Ukraine. By the 11th of November, Ukrainian forces entered Kherson, abandoned by the Russian military. On the 23rd of November, the European Parliament recognized Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism. By mid-December, Ukrainian forces liberated a significant portion of the occupied territory, with Russian losses exceeding 100,000 military personnel killed. On the 31st of December, missile attacks hit Ukraine, including a children's hospital in Kherson. That all marked the first year of the full-scale invasion, a year permeated by pain, suffering, despair, and a stark struggle between good and evil. However, post the anniversary of the full-scale invasion, the conflict evolved into a positional trench warfare reminiscent of the First World War, occasionally witnessing changes in specific sections of the front. The Ukrainian army persisted in maintaining its positions and mounting counterattacks against the adversary. In recent months, much attention has focused on Bakhmut, steadfastly defended by Ukrainian forces. The Wagner Private Military Company, or PMC Wagner, relentlessly besieged the city since the summer of 2022. Led by Yevgeny Prigozhin, an international criminal and terrorist, Wagner operates under complete Russian control. Notably, Wagner's composition comprises hired thugs and assassins with extensive combat experience, differing from regular Russian troops. Despite pressures exerted by Wagner and other Russian groups, Bakhmut remained unconquered. Owing to ammunition shortages and significant casualties, Wagner was compelled to abandon the city. In response, Prigozhin accused the Russian military command of shelling his group. On the 24th of June 2023, he declared a march on Moscow, with his private military company entering Rostov on that day. Unofficial Russian sources allude to the clashes between Wagner and Russian troops. Subsequently, under an agreement between Vladimir Putin and Alexander Lukashenko, Prigozhin abandoned his plan. On the 23rd of August 2023, Prigozhin's private jet crashed near Kuzhenkino in Tver Oblast, approximately 100 meters north of its departure point in Moscow. Prigozhin was amongst the passengers on board to be killed in the crash. Many speculate that this was Putin's retribution for Prigozhin's mutiny, exposing Russia's internal crisis. The Wagner PMC uprising further eroded the authority of Russia's ruling elite and spotlighted vulnerabilities in its defense. Nevertheless, the conflict in Ukraine persists. Despite global media announcements of a substantial Ukrainian counterattack in the summer of 2023, significant changes on the hostilities map are yet to materialize. Delayed deliveries of essential weapons from allies and extensive covert mobilization in Russia hinder Ukraine's decisive breakthrough. Valery Zaluzhny, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine, acknowledged a delay in the war but cautioned against panic. Urging modernization of weapons and expansion of capabilities, he emphasized the risks of concessions to the aggressor, acknowledging weariness in Ukraine and globally. By the last days of November, the Ukrainian armed forces managed to consolidate and extend their presence on the left bank of the Kherson region. Simultaneously, Russian forces persist in their assault on Avdiivka in the Donetsk region, earning it the moniker the Second Bakhmut, due to the fierce intensity of the fighting. Ukrainian defenders valiantly safeguard every inch of Ukrainian territory. The social and political implications of the war in Ukraine, in their desperate struggle for survival, Ukrainians have united like never before. President Volodymyr Zelensky's popularity and authority has soared, securing substantial diplomatic achievements, including agreements with allies for consistent arms supplies, financial aid, and humanitarian assistance. For the first time, the world has coalesced around Ukraine, standing together against global adversity. Zelensky's diplomatic efforts included visits to Ukraine's most vehement supporters, the United States, Britain, and Poland, alongside active participation in numerous conferences and summits aimed at resolving the Ukrainian crisis. On the domestic front, numerous Ukrainian politicians, artists, musicians, actors, and professionals from various fields have joined the armed forces or engaged actively in volunteer initiatives. The aftermath of Russian aggression on liberated territories and the relentless missile attacks remain profoundly distressing. Since the initiation of the full-scale invasion, Russian forces have targeted cities such as Kharkiv, Chernihiv, Kyiv, Kherson, Mykolaiv, and Odessa, resulting in extensive damage or destruction across nearly all Ukrainian cities. Mariupol, now under occupation, has been decimated, reduced to ruins, with unofficial estimates suggesting about 22,000 people buried in mass graves near the city. Disturbingly, many bodies discovered in locations like Izium showed signs of torture. In Irpin and Bucha, mass executions were evident, with bodies found in basements, hands tied, and heads shot through. Ongoing attacks by Russian occupiers target hospitals, schools, and residential structures, signaling an intent to continue damaging critical infrastructure. The surviving population in occupied territories, subjected to repression and torture, faces particular hardships. Russian troops have established filtration camps to identify those deemed disloyal to the Russian government. Thousands of children have been separated from their parents, abducted, and taken to Russian territory. The persistent threat of blowing up the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant looms, and Russian troops have already committed a direct war crime and ecocide by blowing up the dam of the Kakhovka hydroelectric power plant, resulting in 31 deaths and the flooding of thousands of homes. Ukrainians endure daily pain, suffering, physical abuse, and sexual assault by the Russian military. The beheading of a Ukrainian soldier captured on video underscores the extent to which the Russian army, ostensibly combating world fascism, has unwittingly become its mirror image. Russian propagandists continue to spout absurd claims about liberating Ukraine from America and fascist NATO and restoring Russian peace on the ground. However, can the Russian army truly accomplish such a feat? Let's now provide an insight into the typical Russian occupier, whom the Russian media hails as a hero. A Russian soldier is an individual lacking comprehensive knowledge of history and distant from political science. Clad in primitive military gear presented as cutting-edge equipment, the soldier, due to substantial losses and equipment shortages, resorts to outdated weaponry and ammunition. The primary objective of the Russian military is to engage in looting, mistreat and kill civilians, and commit acts of torture and crime. Among the most prized loot are household items such as toilets, refrigerators, and washing machines. Ukrainian cultural heritage and museum collections have been plundered solely on orders from the highest authorities. Additionally, the occupier is frequently subjected to discrimination by their command and is deployed as cannon fodder across various frontline locations. Many Russian occupiers have a criminal history, having been specifically released from Russian prisons to engage in killing and robbery. Upon capture, a Russian soldier promptly abandons imperialist intentions, condemns the genocide of Ukrainians, and recounts instances where wounded comrades were left to perish on the battlefield. It is imperative for the world to recognize the face of this absolute evil and comprehend the daily challenges Ukraine confronts in resisting such forces. Having said all of this, it is extremely important for me to caveat all this by saying that there are plenty of Russians who despise Putin and everything he and his band of thugs are doing to and in the name of Russia. I personally have plenty of Russian friends here in Berlin who, for example, volunteered immediately after the full-scale invasion started to help with the welcoming of Ukrainian refugees. And some of them are psychologists who help the refugees deal with their trauma. Some of these Russians simply spend time with Ukrainian refugees, entertaining them or helping them navigate the tiresome German bureaucracy and finding accommodation, which is not easy in a lot of German cities and nowhere more so than Berlin. However, due to the distortions of the state media in Russia, it's impossible to know exactly how much of the population inside the country is actually against the war. Ukraine is enduring a full-scale invasion orchestrated by the Russian Federation. Each day, Ukrainians face extensive rocket attacks and the genocide of their own people. Despite these challenges, the Ukrainian people stand resilient, continuing to fight for their survival. They express immense gratitude to the international community and all those offering help and support. A special acknowledgement is extended to the citizens of Russia who actively aid Ukraine, resist Putin's regime, and enlist in the armed forces of Ukraine. Now, it should be stressed that assessing the ongoing events from a historical perspective is highly challenging, as the full truth remains elusive, and much remains concealed, as it is obviously an ongoing situation. Furthermore, what makes this even more challenging is that we are watching the war play out on social media, where certain situations and events can be twisted to suit a certain narrative. The war is still ongoing and more information will come to light. Today, I have shared what we know for certain. However, history continues to be written on new pages yet to be revealed. Our only hope lies in positive developments. Let us hope that one day Ukraine will be at peace as a fully sovereign, thriving democracy. I also personally dare to dream that Ukraine will one day live beside a civil and equally democratic Russia with whom it has a constructive relationship. I don't know how or if that will happen, but the world will be a better place because of it, and I live in hope. Thank you so much for listening to Ukraine's story here on the History Buff. It has been such a treat for me to be able to uncover so much about this fascinating and culturally rich country and share it with you all. I would like to also apologize to all Ukrainians for my awful pronunciation of Ukrainian names and place names. Starting with the medieval Kievan Rus, that first Eastern Slavic state, and coming all the way up to Ukraine's present-day struggle for survival, we see that Ukraine's history is a complex interplay of cultural, political, and geopolitical influences, including periods of independence, foreign domination, and ongoing efforts to shape a sovereign identity. Let us hope that one day, Ukraine will be at peace as a thriving democracy. I would like to thank my Ukrainian research partner, Rostislav Pavliu. Thank you so much for your help, Rostislav. And to all Ukrainians out there, I hope I did a good job bringing your story to light. You're always in my thoughts. Your courage in the face of relentless adversity, not just today, but throughout the centuries, inspires me, and I have faith in your ultimate victory and success. Slava Ukraini! Now, if you'd like to find out more about the modern Ukrainian state, such as the meaning behind the flag, the trident symbol worn by President Zelensky on his iconic khaki t-shirts, and more, then please head over to the History Buff Patreon for a bonus episode on Ukrainian national symbols. All proceeds from this bonus episode will be donated straight to the Ukrainian army. The link is in the show notes.